Debbie Barry.
Here.
Dan Moore.
Here.
Bruce Sprinker.
Here.
Three members are present, which constitutes a quorum.
Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We are looking at July's results at this point in time as we go through this. What I thought I would do is present it more the way we do our quarterly report, just so that it's a little bit easier to follow. Having a big spreadsheet up on the screen, I know, is never an easy thing to follow. So we have summarized this. I've taken the big spreadsheet, pared it down for you for this presentation. So if we start with our revenues, we're looking at property tax. Compared to where we thought we would be this year at this time, we are under. I have a conversation with the county going ongoing, trying to determine what exactly the results of that is. So we are looking at that. We are slightly over where we were at this point last year, but under where, I'm sorry. We are under where we were last year at this point in time, but the $400,000 is less than where that difference. So there's something coming into play there. The county and I are researching it, trying to figure that out. We have an ongoing conversation going on with that. Our grants and local. I'm sorry?
I feel like the reports you've given us throughout the year so far, it's actually been coming in earlier or coming in higher.
It was our July remittance that was off. Okay. We get it. July is one of our very big months, two of our big months of the year. So it was our July remittance in 16 that was lower than July of 15. And that's what we're going back to try to determine what actually happened there and what were factors involved. So they're researching some things out there, and I'm researching some things out there to make sure we know exactly what the difference is.
Let us know.
Oh, absolutely. I will keep you advised on that one. Grants and local government. Again, these are our grants that some of our projects were putting in for reimbursements. Some of our projects haven't started, so those reimbursements can't even be filed yet at that point. But we are a little bit behind. It is just a timing difference. Investment income. We are above where we thought we'd be this time of the year. If only everything was doing as well as investments, percentage-wise, we'd be in great shape. But unfortunately, that's not quite the case. Golf receipts. It is slightly under where we thought we would be for this point of the year, but that negative number is less than 1% of their annual budget, so it really is an amazing result considering the challenges that they faced this year. They started the year well, but we know then they faced water and rain, and now they're facing extreme heat, so they are doing very well. There is some good news involved in this, even though there is a negative number. The greens fees at every course, are up over last year, especially at Big Med, Sleepy Hollow, and Seneca, so that's good news. And the food service, the catering numbers are way up over last year also. Zoo receipts are also up. Attendance is down from last year, but paid attendance is up, so that's a portion of this. Portion of this is also, we had a society check come in July also. Spending caps are also above projections at all of the spending caps. And very true positive point here. Revenue from rentals right now is at 90%, 92% of their annual budget. And it's only July, so they still have 5 months. So we certainly expect that area to exceed expectations. The chalet, the restaurants, the concessions, below expectations. It's been a challenging year for a couple of our areas. Obviously, the chalet at the beginning of the year, some of our new operations, the Emerald Necklace restaurant, this being their first year, we've had some challenges there. But we also have very positive messages in this area also. The East 55th Street restaurant is over 90% of their annual budget already also. Ledge Pool is down slightly. When we get to our self-funded reserve, we're going to talk more about that when we get to its matching line item on the expenditure side. And then the marina and other. Again, slightly under projections, but over where it was for 2015. So totally in revenues, mostly due to those grants and reimbursements. We are under where we thought we would be this year. Certainly most of that is timing, and we're keeping an eye on that, and we'll continue to do so. As we move down and look at the expenditures on salaries and fringes, we have a very positive variance there. A lot of that is due to position control. We're currently managing about 55 positions. Also, the operating supplies and other across the categories, we have very favorable variances here. And that's a tribute to all of our employees, all of our chiefs, all of our directors, everybody out there in the field really watching their expenditures. Utilities is another positive variance. Most of the savings in this area is due to natural gas, water, sewer. So that's a definite plus for us. Then when we look at our capital area, positives and negatives, as we know. Land is looking like it's a negative, but that's only because we spent more than we would have expected or projected for this point of the year. We know that's because we had some very favorable propositions come to us earlier this year that we were able to take advantage of. And you will notice later that during our budget adjustment that we are bumping up that land budget also, because at the beginning of the year we did not anticipate some of the outside sources of funds coming in that we have coming in for land purchases. So that is included in the budget. And then the construction materials, construction contracts, as those contracts move forward and are more completed, we expect that to change also. The self-funded reserve are our hospitalization claims. We are having a challenging year this year. Our claims are coming in higher than we anticipated. We are looking at that. We are looking at ways to address that issue. You will also notice on the budget adjustments coming up that we are bumping up the budget for this area for the rest of the year. And that those funds are coming from the reserve that we have built up for that, which is exactly the purpose that it is there for. So all in all, it's a positive message. We're watching expenditures, keeping an eye on those. Continue to watch revenues. Where revenues are down, they are down slightly, or they are down in areas that are just timing differences. So that's it on the financial presentation.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Let's move on to new business.
Good morning, everyone. New business, we have three items for consideration for the board. The very first one is budget adjustment number two. Karen, go ahead and take that away for the 2016. Again, this is just budget adjustment number two.
Absolutely, thank you. We do have, budget is not, as I keep telling the departments, the budget is not a singular event, it is a process. So we know that when we set the budget at the beginning of the year, it will be changed several times. We normally come back to the board four or five times, so this is our second such adjustment. A lot of the adjustments are just moving funds within categories, as we have a better idea of where they actually needed to be spent. Some of those, though, also are moving them actually and increasing them due to other funding coming in, or in the case of hospitalization, knowing that we have additional expenses that are going to be coming up. So that is presented to you for your approval.
Recommended actions on the middle portion of page four.
Move the motion.
Second.
All favor?
Aye.
Next action item is the contract amendment for the RFP 6114. You can request restoration at the Acacia reservation. This is the project that we've been working on for the stream restoration. It combines a number of different funding sources, including WRRSP, EPA, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, Conservation Fund balance. We'll help pull all of that together. We've been working with Biohabitats to continue this. The GMP established prices working through. We're also working through what we anticipate the construction schedule getting started here in early September. The recommended action falls on the bottom portion of page six for the guaranteed maximum price of Biohabitats.
Can I ask one question? How much is the Metro Parks part of this coming out of our budget?
It's really just staff time.
It's staff time, and there are certain provisions that the grant funds won't cover specifically, so we're still working through the Ohio EPA
Right. Okay. Those
details, but at the end of the day, it's probably about 100 to 120,000 total.
Fantastic.
more than a $2.0 million.
That's what I wanted to hear.
And we're also going to be bringing back to you another GMP for Area 2 in the coming months.
Okay.
This is a phased GMP approach.
Move the motion.
Second.
All favor?
Aye.
The very next action item is the nomination of Terry Robeson for his second stint on the NRAC, the Natural Resource Advisory Council in District 1. This is the Clean Ohio program that has been very successful, which has brought over $3.7 million to the District 1 for the preservation of green space. We have competed very successfully over the years, starting back in 2001. And so this is the recommendation for Terry to be renominated as the Cleveland Metro Parks representative to NRAC. Top of page 7.
Move the motion.
Second, but I have a question. Is the composition of the NRAC, the way they comprise the voters?
I will defer to the chair, actually, who under DOCWIP, they actually put all of the people on the board.
That's an interesting shot right here. There are certain entities that have an automatic bid, and Metro Parks is one of those, and then others are chosen at large, and so I don't have the actual breakdown.
Yeah, I was just curious.
Mayor Rendo was one of them at the time. David Beach was one of them.
Mayor Rendo's on, well, she's the DACWIC representative.
She's on DACWIC, yeah. So she's DACWIC too, anyway.
Correct, yeah. Exactly. So there's one DACWIC member that is.
And DACWIC's funded through the state of Ohio.
Correct,
And they're the governing body that
oversees
it.
I think only because of the alphabet soup of these things, but it might not be a bad idea one time. Almost like a cheat sheet. We always talk about how we go out for outside funding, but in many respects, most people really, where it's easy to lose sight of where the dollars are starting from and then how they're being sort of filtered through these different agencies. If you look at NOAACA, WRSS, I mean, I think it would be good just to kind of do a primer sometime.
Yeah, we can even, I believe today they do the vote for the actual makeup of the NRAC, or if it's in the next week
just
or so.
Just the new members, it is today, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think what we can do then is get the new composition of the board, and then maybe even bookmark what we've actually brought in.
Yeah, just but I mean, when we tell people we're going outside funding, just how those dollars are sort of tracing them back, I think it would be education. Yeah. I mean, it's not very, I think just more education than anything else. But second.
I guess only since you brought this up, I do sit on the DAPA board, and so I'm going to vote on this motion for the parks, but I will recuse myself on the DAPA side, so just so that's clear to everyone.
Good. So.
Motion second, all in favor?
Aye.
The next series is the tabulation of awarding bids. This is the co-op, Ohio Co-op 6217, 3 carry-all utility vehicles and 4 passenger golf cart.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
We have approval of vouchers and payroll.
Resolution 1608-130. The following vouchers have been reviewed as to the legality of expenditure and conformity with the Ohio Revised Code.
Move the motion.
Second.
All favor?
Aye.
We'll move into information briefing items. With us this morning, we have one employee guest. Sean?
Morning, Chairman. It's my pleasure to introduce Jeff Collard. He's Jeff Collard, has been with us a short time since February. He is at Seneca Golfer. He is the clubhouse manager and golf professional. Prior to coming to Seneca, he was at Fowler's Mill, where he was a golf professional there and operations manager. So we've taken him from that nice, pristine golf course, and we threw him into Seneca in the middle of all this construction that we're doing and trying to put this all together. As you know, the 9 holes were done last year, and they're being very well accepted by the public, and now we're in the process of doing all the excavation work on the second 9 hole. We started August 1st, and that's what we're starting on that. So Jeff is dealing with all the dust and dirt and construction going on besides still trying to run a golf course at the same time and be profitable at some point. So Jeff, call it.
Well, yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate this. Very excited to be at Seneca, seeing all the renovations that were just open, and plus seeing the ground will be laid in the second half. It's going to be very exciting golf course, and we're going to open and turn out to be a beautiful 27-hole facility. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
And just in front of you, I know Brian mentioned to you, but you each have a sample of some honey that was extracted from a beehive at Washington Golf Course. That hive was started in end of April, and we harvested the honey just at the end of July. So 3 months we've gotten about a gallon of honey out of the hive so far. So enjoy. Enjoy.
Thank you very much.
Bruce wanted another makeup. Was it clover?
Well, you know, it's funny. I'm not quite sure. But see, when we had the hive at Seneca, in the fall, the honey is much darker. So it depends on the plants that are blooming and where they're feeding from the nectar and things like that. So right now, it's just all the spring plants that they're
just don't tell us it's Phragmites.
No. Enjoy it.
Thanks.
Very good. Information, the next item we have is the recent financial awards. And again, this is in accordance with CAPRA, the Commission for Accreditation of Park and Recreation. We do conduct a financial audit annually. With us this morning, we have Rebecca Wardowski from the Auditor of State's office.
Perfect. Good morning. Good morning. Just a little bit about the Auditor of State Award with distinction. This is the highest award the State Auditor's Office gives, and there's only about 5% of our clients that received this, so it's a very, very, something to be very proud of. And then the Auditor State Award with Distinction is given to those entities that file an annual CAFR and a timely financial report in accordance with GAAP, as well as receive a clean audit report. The clean audit report means that your financial audit did not contain findings for recovery, material citations, material weaknesses, significant deficiencies, or single audit findings, or any other questionable costs. So congratulations, Karen and your staff.
I do want to say thank you, first of all, to Auditor Yost's office, second of all, to Brian and the board for expecting the highest level of financial integrity and professionalism from us, and then giving us the support we need to achieve those goals. I need to thank my whole staff, including especially Dana Cavender, Dana Scully, who absolutely took the lead and took the point on the audit and the gap conversion this year. Her level of expertise and professionalism was greatly appreciated. And a thank you to the whole team. I may be accepting this award, but it really does go to the entire finance department. It's been a challenging year for all of us. We've been shorthanded. We're taking on many new initiatives, so it's been a real challenge this year. So thank you to them, and from them, thank you to everyone.
Congratulations. We do have one other one. There is I believe it's crystal of some sort. It is the Achievement of Excellence in Procurement. This was a very interesting, when I first got here, I think we had won it one time and then we had fallen off the radar. And really what it boiled down to is we were not keeping up. We just weren't keeping up with the standards of procurement. And when it talks about how this award comes about, I think we were one of only three park districts in the country to receive this award, or special districts, I should say. But it talks about innovation, modernization, professionalism, e-procurement, productivity, leadership, and the overall part of the procurement function. So this is from the National Procurement Institute. This is now, I believe, our fifth time?
Six
total. So congratulations to our procurement team. Some more round of applause. The next one we have is the 2016 Parkway Paving Package Bid. Jim put a suit on today, so I'm going to give him
the floor. I shave. Doesn't happen a lot. It's all in the name of asphalt. A few years ago now, I was up in front of you showing you the conditions of our roads, what we needed to do going forward to make sure our roads were acceptable to public use, to be proud of our roads. So this year we are going out to bid, we're actually out to bid right now. We are opening bids 2 weeks from yesterday, so August 31st I believe is the date. So at the next board meeting at September 8th, I'm hoping to provide to you a recommendation for award for a new asphalt package for 2016.
Oh, probably shut off.
Karen did that purposely.
Save you.
There we go. So just a real brief reminder of what we have out there in the field. We have about 91 miles of roadway. These numbers now are updated to include the lakefront acquisition that we had in 2013. 22 miles of service drives, 108 miles of paved all-purpose trail, and about 181 acres of parking lots. So this year our asphalt package total is about $1.5 million when you take into consideration the $1 million for paving, parkway paving that we're about to award, $200,000 for a parking lot paving that we just completed, $50,000 for crack sealing, $120,000 for striping, so we're right about that $1.5 million mark. So in 2012, I showed pictures of what our roads were like. They were not nice. You can see here, we were waiting till they got, till the condition of the roads got to this point before we were able to get on them to reconstruct them. And quite honestly, we were waiting a little bit too long. I'm happy to show you pictures today. These are areas that we're going to target this year. You can see the difference if I jump back real quick. You can see the level of deterioration that we have across the entire roadway. A lot of these areas went for 200-300 feet at a time. We're dealing now with areas that are much more compact, and the level of deterioration is not nearly what we saw a few years back. And just some numbers behind it. These areas right here, 2011, 12, 13, you can see we were repairing about 50 to 55% of the roadway surface before we were able to go in and do the overlay work. Starting in 2014, 2015, and now this year, we're now getting ourselves back down into that 30% range, 35% range, which really helps us. It means that we're getting on the roads when we're supposed to be getting on the roads to repair the roads, and we're not waiting too long. If we wait too long, we're doing all this work and spending all this money before we can even put that final course of asphalt on. So right now, we're in that sweet spot, right in the 30% range, 35% range, where I believe that we need to be. So what we're going to go after this year, we're going to go for about $178,000 per mile. Tracking all of our costs throughout the years, I'm very, very comfortable with that number. That's what we've been paying on average. When our repair areas are floating in that 30 to 35% range, we're at 37% this year, and we're going to try to target just under 5.5 miles. So when you add all that together, we're going to be pushing just under $1 million for a roadway package this year. This is our roadway rating that we completed in 2012. When we started in 2012, none of these roads had been touched in, if I had to guess, probably the last 15 to 20 years. So everything in yellow that you see on there is things that we've already fixed. Everything in red you see on there is things that we're going to fix this year. So you can see out of the top 41, I believe is where the page cut off, out of the top 41 roads, when I say top, I mean the bottom. These are the worst roads. They start at the worst going downward from there. So of the top 41 worst condition roads, we have knocked out almost all of it. The top two, I just want to point out real quick, these top two up here, Strawberry Lane and Oxbow Lane in North Chagrin, those are untouched, and there's a reason behind that. We're going to do something different out there. Strawberry Lane, we're actually going to turn into an all-purpose trail. It's a redundant road that really serves no purpose. And this one, Oxbow Lane, is the same thing. It's at the bottom of North Chagrin. It's basically a horseshoe-type road, and we're going to take the north leg of that out simply because it's roadway that's not really needed.
Is that the one that goes over to Rogers?
It's the one from the intersection of Ox Lane or Oxbow Lane that goes to the north to Rogers.
Which is a terrible curve anyway.
It is a bad curve, and it's a bad intersection for sight distance to pull out on Chagrin River Road. So, and then the other two, I just want to point out, this one right here, this Valley Parkway in Brecksville, and this one right here, which is another section of Valley Parkway in Brecksville, that's where we're currently under construction for that extension for the all-purpose trail. That'll run from Ridge Road to Brecksville Road. So we don't want to do any road work in there until all that heavy equipment is out of there. When you compile all the work that Sean McHugh was talking about at Seneca Golf Course, it doesn't make sense to redo these roads yet until all that other construction is done. So I showed you this map in 2012. Yellow is bad, magenta is good. We have very little magenta and a lot of yellow. Yellow roads on this map were roads that are 10 years or older. And if I shoot to where we are today, same exact map, we have a lot of magenta in here. This is all magenta over here. We have magenta out on the west side. magenta down in Hinckley now. So you can see the areas with the red dots are what we're going to hit this year. We have this area in Big Creek right here in Parma Heights, which is basically from Snow Road to Stump Road. We have an area in Brecksville, which is going to be the west half of Brecksville, starting at the line at Edgerton Road there where Brecksville and Mill Stream meet, over to Ridge Road. Again, going from Ridge Road this way, we don't want to do anything yet because that's where that all-purpose trail construction is going on right now. And then this area up in here in North Chagrin, when we did the paving out at North Chagrin, we only had the funding, look at that shaking hand, we only had the funding to basically do from that intersection down the hill, and this section out by the Nature Center was in okay condition because of the bridge replacement. And I knew we had a big improvement coming at the North Chagrin Nature Center parking lot. All of that now has been complete, so now we're comfortable going through and completing this last 3/4 of a mile out here in North Chagrin. So with all that being said, I'll leave you with that map. And if there's any questions on what we're up to this year or what we've done in the past, I'd be happy to answer.
Overall, with parking lots, is there going to be a change in how they're designed as far as being more permeable? Because I know it's more expensive, but in the long run, can we not be doing...
We can. Yeah. And I think we can go forward with alternative designs. I think we should be very, very cautious. Permeable pavement is great when it first goes in. The long-term effects, though...
How about the bioswales at the ends, though, as far as, you know, if you capture it on the edge?
Absolutely, we can. And that's what we're constantly going after grants. If you look back at our grants that we've done, North Chagrin Nature Center parking lot, the Seneca parking lot, we're starting to look at other parking lots that we have. We are going after those dollars.
You showed us the one in Seneca where you were doing
Yes. That. Yes, we are. And so North Chagrin Nature, so that was a combination of bioswales, old school retention, and permeable pavement. I want to see how the permeable pavement holds up and what kind of long-term maintenance costs we're going to have with it.
Right.
Because quite honestly, it's not old enough in this area yet to really get a good grip on what we're in for 15, 20 years down the road. So I think we should proceed with caution. We should still be on top of our game and go forward with those projects. But I think we need to proceed with caution to make sure we're not setting ourselves up for something down the road.
I guess it was more just the other techniques, the other best management practices.
As far as stormwater control?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And going forward, with cooperations we have with other government agencies, if there's a chance to start doing some of those improvements and starting getting credit for some of those improvements, then I think that's going to push that agenda even further up the ladder as far as being a priority.
Jim, does it make any sense to have part of our parking lot, the part that is not used during the winter,
mm-hmm.
Assuming that the parks are less used during the winter, part of it gravel and the rest of it paved. I mean, forgetting about the new fancy porous concrete
yeah.
and all that, just old-fashioned gravel.
In certain spots it does. The only problem with gravel is if you look at it from an environmental impact standpoint, it's not recognized that pavement is any better than gravel or gravel is any better than pavement. So from a stormwater runoff concept, there's really not a whole big difference.
Okay.
As far as cost of construction, absolutely. But what I've found is that the layer of asphalt that we put on top is generally not the cost. The cost that we really incur is the excavation that goes out and the stone that has to go in, which we would do with whether it was paved or not. So I think in certain situations, we do have areas that we keep gravel because the demand is not there 365 days a year. But in other situations like the chalet and the zoo, I mean, we have to make sure everything.
But isn't the part under the asphalt or the gravel? I would think that would be very permeable.
You would think, but the kind of stone that we use, it's a mixture. It's 304 stone. It's a mixture of threes and fours and fines. And when those fines pack together, it doesn't let a whole lot of water through. I've actually argued that point and lost. With other environmental people around, and they've been able to show me technical data that's now convinced me that compacted aggregate, if it's the right kind of aggregate, is just as non-permeable as asphalt or concrete.
Is that mostly limestone?
It's crushed limestone, yeah, or crushed recycled concrete. Yeah.
So it glues?
It glues itself together, yeah. So, and that's generally what we use underneath our roads, or our parking lots.
Yeah,
so.
Thank you.
Just giving Jim and his whole staff kudos. I can remember in 2011, 2012, going through this, we had a little boardroom table, and we had so much work to do. It was almost impossible to look at. We put the pavement management system in. We've gone at it very aggressively. There's other work that we're planning to keep moving forward to, so that we keep these under better rotation. The public is noticing. We're trying to make sure the repairs are more long-lasting, and we're trying to find ways to partner with others. We partnered with Strongsville. We did some work they ended up paying. So we're finding creative ways intergovernmentally to keep these processes moving. So, you know, Jim and his team have lived this, and we're working on our all-purpose trails to make sure the condition of those stay to a high value as well. So congrats to you and your team for managing this process and getting us to this point, and I look forward to continued success with the plan.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely
amazing.
Thank you.
North Chagrin was before that, the next information item we have is the reservation plan update. This is Bedford, Brecksville, Hinckley, and Fest Creek. So this is kind of the pre-presentation. This is, again, in draft form. I want to make sure that everybody has a draft form. We have scheduled public meetings coming up. Again, this is our process by which we're continuing to work through our plans and in front of you are some of the documents. And I will turn it over to Kelly.
Thank you. Great. Good morning. This year's reservations are Bedford, Brecksville, Hinckley, and Westbury. So we're excited to kind of continue around the Emerald Necklace and look at kind of a cluster of reservations together. We kicked off the process in January with our team of internal stakeholders, and it's fantastic to get to work with folks with such expertise in all different realms of how the parks work and what our mission really is. So we've had numerous concepts brought forth, discussed those, debated those, and resulted in this draft plan that we're presenting to you today. So after today, we're looking to go visit with some of our neighboring stakeholders, some of the communities, watershed groups, and then take it to the public open houses in September. Once we gather that public input, which will also come from our website, as of today the plans are on our website along with the comment form, we'll get our stakeholders together again to evaluate any changes and develop that final concept, which we'll be bringing to you later this year. Our reservation plans are really a great way to tie our day-to-day actions back to our strategic goals. And so the way we approach the plans, we start out with the vision, which this is really fun. This is where we're talking about what sets Bedford apart from Brecksville, apart from Hinckley. What are the special characteristics? What does this reservation kind of want to be? And once we get that, we drill down and look at the strategic goals in relation to that specific reservation. You know, what can we do within the limits of West Creek to best fulfill our goals? And from that point, we get to the actions. And I kind of like the actions because that's where we're getting granular. That's where we're helping folks inform work plans, tie into the capital budget. Again, tying back to that big overall idea about what we're accomplishing as a park district. One of our key goals is connections. And I think it helps to kind of back out and look at the cluster of reservations and how they relate to one another. In this area, we have the special relationship too with, kind of shows up in light green, Cuyahoga Valley National Park, is a huge component of this area. We also have some regional trails with the towpath and the Summit County Hike Bike, and then of course our APT system. So starting to look at what are some of the things that appear to us. Just off to the east, the connection between Bedford and South Chagrin Reservation along Richmond Road, we know that needs some strengthening, both the roadway directions and the APT connection. And then again, between Bedford and Brecksville, we think that we can reinforce, that you're through this whole Emerald Necklace corridor. We're excited about our partner West Creek Conservancy's trail plans with the Hemlock Trail. They're funded through Clean Ohio to take a trail from the towpath up to Brecksville Road. And so that's going to get us eventually over to West Creek Reservation, which is a great link. And then all the work that we've put into for the Valley Parkway APT link is coming online. So drilling down a little bit closer, I did put packets on your desk. There's a lot of information to cover, so I'm just going to kind of hit the high points. This illustrates, starting at the east side of Bedford Reservation, there's that link we're talking about along Richmond to South Chagrin. We've had conversations with the city of Bedford. They have some redevelopment plans in their community, and they're really excited about the idea of tying into our APT. They see that for a resource to help drive economic development, to pull visitors into their community and allow access to our fantastic system. So they're looking for funding to help promote that connection. Further west in Bedford, the Lost Meadows Reserve area. Right now we have a beautiful site. We do a seasonal tent, and we think that's a good location to go ahead and build a structure. One of the great discussions we had in Bedford was, what does Bedford want to be? And the answer to that is, Bedford is such a great escape, especially on that north side of Tinker's Creek, that we really want to do all we can to protect those resources. And going upstream from Tinker's Creek with the tributaries, and then looking at some trail connections. There's some potential to tie into some adjacent neighborhoods that are fairly dense, allow those folks the respite of getting into the reservation.
And the Lost Meadows Reserve shelter, is that would that be the sort of thing? Would just be out in the woods somewhere? Would that be rentable, or how would that work?
Right now, it is a reserve facility, and it's a tent, and it's actually in kind of a big clearing, a big meadow, down fairly close to Tinker's Creek.
Okay.
So it would be just an open shelter.
I understand.
And be a, yes.
similar to what we've done before. Commissioner Mastic, we had a tent kind of preempting we thought. Same thing here, we're going to do test models. We're doing one over at Wallace right now, kind of seasonally. So we're testing the models by which, you know, where is the capacity for them.
Excellent, I see. And just a question, what is the return? Do those sort of pay for themselves, or are they still short of that?
Well, if you look at it, I mean, they're very linear. I mean, when they get put in, like the one that was at Mastic was supported through the Emerald Necklace Endowment Fund through a directed gift. And so that one's got a better rate of return. But some of them have been in the system for 40, 50 years, so their paybacks, you know, they're already done at that point in time. So you have to look at, and we're going through kind of a study right now, looking at where we're at from an agency standpoint, where is the competition at. So I'll give you a little bit better handle here.
They seem to be in great demand, being some of them rented out a year ahead of time. And so the issue I think would be interesting is how long does it take to pay back the typical, because clearly it's a service to the public, and if we can make it pay in, 8 years or 6 years, something like that, you'd think that would be a pretty good.
Yeah, I think we'll have to take a look at the data and find out where we have capacity, where it fits reservable versus non-reservable. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of things that we look at before we actually put them out, but good points.
So kind of continuing to proceed to the west, this is where Overlook Lane splits off and heads south, and we do have an APT along that route, but this section of Gorge Parkway that travels down these slopes and links up with Dunham and Tinkers Creek Road. There's not an APT currently there. And as we have backed up and looked at that context, we see that an APT along that north edge would be important, could serve a lot of visitors to hit Tinkers Creek Road and head over to the valley. So we're studying ways to make that happen. It may be a different approach to using the bridle trail where we're still studying whether we pave a section, side by side with gravel. Again, trying to figure out how to solve that problem, because it's tough. We can't run it right next to the road because the topography and
don't allow it.
Yeah, that's a challenge, but that's one of the things on our list to study.
Would you trace the bike, the new trail that people are using as a mountain bike?
The mountain bike trail. There's a fairly extensive system. That we have some in this area, and then we have some continuing over on this way. I could get a more detailed mountain bike trail map to you.
It is about 12 miles now.
And it's roughly. Really popular. Just being out, doing my work in the parks, I've had people stop and tell me how much they love it.
I've heard nothing but fantastic things about it. I mean, just rave reviews. And from not just people in Cleveland, but from people in Pittsburgh and other cities.
Well, I think that's something the city of Bedford is aware of too. They've heard that, and that's helping want to connect with us. So just west of Dunham, the Astorhurst, that was a recent, I think we have a little glitch on our map. That's not Cuyahoga Valley, that's us. That was a recent Clean Ohio acquisition, and our natural resources staff have already done some plantings there. We're looking at just maybe a primitive picnic area and maybe a future trail connection there. So now we're going to zoom out just a little bit again. To orient you, we have Bedford in the upper corner, Brecksville in the lower corner. And in studying these, keeping this Emerald Necklace in mind, we kind of lose a little bit of a link between these two reservations. We have a great opportunity because there already is a designated corridor that's a National Scenic Byway with the Ohio and Erie Canal Way, America's Byway. That is a mouthful. So it's shown in yellow, and it continues. It basically follows the towpath trail, the canal route. But if we come out of Brecksville, we could help with our wayfinding and tie into that byway to get up to Tinkers Creek Road. At which point we would spin off and head over toward Gorge Parkway to reinforce that Emerald Necklace. I had mentioned the Hemlock Trail connection previously, so you can see where that starts to head over toward West Creek. So that kind of helps us with the north end. But then as we go south to Brecksville, we'd really like to do an APT link kind of on the south edge. We have the Summit County Bike Hike Trail. We have the towpath. our APTs, and so if we can get a section of APT along Sagamore Road, that's probably the best solution given the sensitivity, the topography, you know, within the park itself. Again, Cuyahoga Valley is a huge presence, Cuyahoga Valley National Park. So we're going to be meeting with them by the end of the month to make sure we're coordinating the work they're doing, the work we're doing, because to the visitor, they don't really care, you know, what property they're in. We want to make it as seamless as we can. Brecksville is just in great shape, and it really serves as this kind of transition point. We have pretty heavy development, we have kind of suburban feel, and then all of a sudden we have rural and national park areas on our other boundary. We want to improve the parking along Chippewa Road by taking it off the road and pushing it into Chippewa Field a bit, adding a restroom to help facilitate trailhead use. The Nature Education Building is well under design, and that's really going to supplement our historic structure with the Nature Center in Brecksville. The Management Center, our crews have been doing a great job with the facilities we have, but there's some opportunities to build some efficiencies and to better serve the work we do, maybe combining some uses there. So next we're going to continue from this corner along Valley Parkway to the west. So this is the corner here in Brecksville. And as everyone's aware, this Valley Parkway Trail and the relocated Bridle Trail are underway over here to Broadview Road. We do know that the city of Brecksville has proposed some plans for their property adjacent to us. So that's, again, one of the reasons that we're going to go out and visit with these adjacent municipalities, making sure that we're dovetailing as much as possible. And then the second phase of the Valley Parkway Trail will link us over through Brecksville to Mill Stream Run Reservation. I feel like a lot of work is already underway in that corridor, not a ton of recommendations coming out of that stretch. So traveling down to Hinckley, this is the east side of Hinckley Reservation, kind of a different way to look at it, but trying to piece things together. So we would, kind of traveling down the east branch of the Rocky River Corridor. The resource value there is so important. We want to continue those protection efforts. And that really helps, string together all our reservations from Hinckley all the way to the lakefront. So we see that as a key. Hinckley is another location where we've been operating out of an older structure, and we're looking at different sites for a new management center to facilitate those park operations. And then over on the west side of Hinckley, a lot of the visitors from Cuyahoga County come from the north down into Hinckley, and we think there's an opportunity to look at kind of a gateway, establish our presence as far north as Center Road 303, and continue south in kind of a parkway feel along the east bank, or the east branch of the Rocky River Corridor, to really build a sense of arrival into the park. The lake affords us so many recreational opportunities. It really sets Hinckley apart with the different things we can do at Hinckley. But we know we need to be looking at the dam, some potential dredging, working on long-term vision for Hinckley, and those studies are underway. Ledge Pool, we kind of inherited some of those facilities and kind of bringing those up to a little bit of a higher standard, maybe separating some of the vehicular and pedestrian circulation. There could even be space for an additional water feature to enhance the pool operations there. And then finally, West Creek. West Creek is just such a gem. Before the reservation planning process, I have to admit I hadn't hiked back through that whole valley, which is just stunning, especially when you consider what it's surrounded by. So, we've got a great start at West Creek, all the new facilities. With our partners with West Creek Conservancy continuing to, to add connections, add pieces, we're really just kind of building on what's there at West Creek. And so that's kind of the Cliff Notes version of where these draft plans are. They are on the website. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Wow.
Deep breath.
I have a question that relates to mountain biking. We have two substantial ones that we put in Strongsville and the one in Bedford. And those are considered terrific. The one in Strongsville is more of a beginner's area. The one in Bedford is steeper and tougher. And the new one in the national park is really tough, in terms of but we're missing ones that are easier. In other words, ones that are you know, trails in the woods that you can ride your bike on, that you can take your 7-year-old or 8-year-old child with you, but that are in the woods. Do we have, you know, right now, just looking at it from the outside, we've got 100 miles of horse trails and 20 miles of mountain bike trails. And we have roughly, you know, maybe a million, maybe 50% of our constituencies have bicycles, and maybe 3% have horses, or 2%. So there seems to be a mix problem here that I think we should deal with at some point. And I'm not suggesting, you know, there's an image of wild mountain bikers. I'm talking about people who like to ride their bikes in the woods. And it was not, for example, you know, along a river. Not the kind of stuff where you're going up hills and down hills and over rocks, and jumping over trees and that sort of stuff. I think that should be something that we build into our plan. Originally, we were sort of thinking about doing 10 miles a year. And I guess maybe I was thinking about doing 10 miles. but I think we should have a plan that deals with that rather large constituency. I mean, it's getting to be bigger and bigger. And we're not, you know, I think Ralph has done a wonderful job. I think the whole crew has. But I think we have to think a little bit bigger in that area.
I think there's a number of things when you look at kind of these natural, more natural surface, you know, types in the woods. And I think when we looked at, you know, the model, the test model down in Millstream, the Royalview area, you know, and certainly it overcame a lot of challenges, you know, relative to, you know, building a sustainable trail. You know, Bedford we built off of. What it's also done is other park districts are looking at it as well. So it's more regional than hyper-local, and I think that's a very positive. The other thing that we're looking at is, you know, we have a lot of different things that we do. And when we look at our trail systems, looking at the assessments of Rocky River, looking at other assessments of other areas, I think we're looking at how to rebuild some of the infrastructure that's kind of sitting in wait for some of these repairs. So where we were looking at 10 or whatever the number was, we're kind of dropping back now and trying to work in some of these reservations, teach some of the staff how to rework some of these trails that were old farm roads or whatever they happened to have been, going down fall lines and fixing some of those. So there's a period of kind of pushing and pulling. We kind of put in and redid. You know, some of the Royalview was a reuse and an adaptive reuse where we took out a bunch of trails that were down the fall line. So I think stay tuned. I think you're going to see that incorporated into kind of the plans very organically as they grow through the system. But I think there's always that balance of things. And, you know, this area has been very equestrian for, you know, for its history. And there are still a lot of people that buy relative to that for access to the trails and the enjoyment of them. And so we need to make sure that we're kind of staying in balance of that. And again, where appropriate, and working with our natural resources team, we've got a model by which I think we can be successful for the future. So your point is well taken. I think we're on it. I think you'll see it embedded into some of these newer plans.
Yeah, I think embedding it in the plans is what I'd like to see, recognizing the difference in the size of the two constituencies.
But I think you're mischaracterizing a small amount. Say your numbers are correct, that it's 50% that own a bike. Not all of those people want to ride off-road, and many of them would only ride on a trail. So, I'm not saying we shouldn't be considering it. I completely agree with you. But
the trails don't exist, so they
push. Well, there's several, and they're not only ours. As Brian said, it's regional, so there's other people that are...
Well, the trails we have are mountain biking. The ones we've purposely built as mountain biking trails.
Right.
Well, but they're hiked, people hike them as well. So
they're
multi-purpose in that way. So again, I think it's, you know, it's when you're looking at each reservation has its own unique character. You know, Huntington is very different than Washington, which is very different than a Brandon Woods or a Brecksville. So, you know, I think we're trying to find where appropriate and where the natural resource values are being protected and recognized and where some of these activities can actually function.
We are going through the system, you know, taking a deep dive on 4 or 5 reservations annually, and we have identified some of the challenge areas with trails, and we work to follow up with Ralph and his area of expertise with the trails planning. A good example is the work occurring at North Chagrin, where we said, hey, we drew a big circle, you know, the area from Strawberry to Squires is, you know, problematic.
But in your discussion, you didn't mention the word bike once. And to me,
that was intentional.
Yeah. But I mean, the point is, I think this has to be part of our planning process, because we have.
Well, how do we track use? How do we track the use?
Well, you're not allowed to. I mean, people are using them, and we can use cameras to show that bikes, I'm sure, are using them. I've been laid up for a year and a half, so I haven't been out much. But I think that we could, the trails we have, a lot of them we could use for bikes. You know, we could include bikes in the
Within reason.
But I mean, mountain bikers don't want to go on flat, level trails that are wide. I mean, you're going to get a different...
There's another aspect of this that I think that complicates, and is that it's redesigning trails, period. Regardless of the use, it's just on the topographical challenge.
Absolutely.
There's a certain investment of energy just redoing that. So I think trying to prioritize the retrofit or the resurfacing is very much part of the process, because there's a lot involved in that. But I'm just curious, I mean, I don't disregard the point, I'm just curious how we can evaluate those sort of categories.
How we can add it to the planning process.
Well, and a good
the
example.
Word bike.
Definitely, and I apologize, I probably just, blurt out APT, but the idea even at Bedford, looking at from that top of that hill, that north connection down to Tinker's Creek, we're considering, can we combine that with the bridle trail? But we want to be really mindful of the potential conflicts and keep everybody safe.
Which is one of the first things we heard when we started.
We hear it everywhere, but when we go out west, it's hard to find a trail that you can ride horses on that you can't ride a bike on. I mean, I
think it's an evolution in Cleveland. I mean, it's we've been working on it. We partnered in a couple of areas, and it's an education process. I mean, I think everybody has
got more tracks.
Well, very good. So
wait, I have one related question, though.
Yes.
You did talk about the APT trails. Did you identify new trails, or are these just sort of ones we had already thought about? Because I'm just thinking back again to our overall trails matrix, and have you, through this process, come up with some new connections that we had not considered before, and they should be evaluated in that way?
I think what we're kind of maybe identifying some more long-term trails, that if there's more of a community support, they may make it onto the trails matrix.
Okay.
A lot of times we're doing those in conjunction with partners. So maybe that connection into Bedford. And I know Sarah is looking at the trails matrix. Somehow we are able to accomplish a lot of projects now all of a sudden.
Yeah.
So that's going to impact the trails matrix.
I think it'd be good to review that again in the not too distant future, just because I do think it's an important tool, and recall where our priorities are and why we're making those priorities.
Great.
Thank you, though.
Really
Thank
good.
You.
Yeah, very nice.
Thank
nice.
You. And I do want to mention, I put some flyers for the open houses out on the podium, so those also have the link to the website for the plans for anyone who's interested. So great. We're going to talk really quickly now about, we're embarking on a historic and cultural resource management plan. And, I love to use this graphic because, to me, it really exemplifies what we're all about. Look, we have this fantastic 100-year vision. We have this great heritage and legacy. So the Historic and Cultural Resource Management Plan is really going to help us document and inventory that. It is a requirement of CAPRA, so we're helping fulfill our CAPRA requirements with this plan. It's also part of our strategic plan update. Goes to organizational sustainability, having respect for our heritage and the key contributing items. So what the plan is going to consist of, an inventory. We have an almost overwhelming inventory. I put together 7 pages of fine print of things that were constructed before 1970, and also contributing elements such as some of the natural features, some of the factors that really make the metro parks the metro parks. So we're looking to bring in an outside consultant to work with staff to help us inventory, categorize, and then give us some overall best management practices for really how do we take care of this. We know we're stewards, but with such an overwhelming inventory too, where do we focus our energy? So we're looking forward to getting those, that input. We have a proposal on the street. Proposals are due tomorrow. We'll begin the evaluation, enter into a contract with the consultant, and look to kick off around October 1st. There will be significant staff involvement. We've done so much work with the 100-year book. We have so much information already on hand. And I would like to recognize Judy McKeegan too, because she's been a great part of this, and she's going to be helping me along with some other internal stakeholders to develop this plan with the consultant. We think it'll take about 6 months, so we look to wrap that up around April 1st. And that's just kind of a quick overview of what we're embarking on.
Very good. Excellent updates. The last information briefing item we have is just the Edgewater improvement. This is the replacement beach house area. Sean's going to give us a couple of quick slides that the commissioners have seen this kind of throughout. We've worked very diligently to narrow the scope. And Sean, take it away.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. So excited to be before you this morning to talk about the improvements taking place at Edgewater. The great thing here is we are literally forwarding the roadmap that was laid forth in our master plans. But as you've seen these past few months, we are the beneficiaries of some improvements that are occurring via partnerships with ODOT, the City of Cleveland, and the like. So we now have the West 73rd Street underpass constructed and open to traffic. We now have the roundabout in the park open to traffic and helping to alleviate flows and all those turning movements in that area. And then we can also see out in the field that the grade is being cut for the new trail headed up to the upper Edgewater, the bluff section of the park. So here is our initial concept on that roundabout. Here's the roundabout under construction, and here's the roundabout about ready to accept traffic. So today this is open and really, really working well. We've got some more work to do here coming in late August and September with some additional curbs and crosswalks. I'm very happy with how it's turned out and how it is improving traffic flow. And then we talked about that path taking us up the hill. The grade for that has been cut in. We'll see pavement down on that yet this fall and next spring. So then come the next steps, implementing those items in the master plan to continue the momentum not only at Edgewater Park but all the lakefront parks. Edgewater Park specifically, we've been working with our design team to forward the improvements and flow to the parking lot, work on that arrival plaza and the seating, the dune and seating, the dune walls and seating by the beach, and then the replacement beach house. So with that, Bielowski has been hard at work making sure that the plans are living within our budget and working with Higley. So where we are today, and again, this is just a very brief update because we're finalizing plans as we speak, is working towards implementing those improvements. So you can see here that the parking lot is really bifurcated, where you're sent down these aisles and then sent back without that circulation amongst and along the beach. So our parking lot improvements will give us that circulation, allow for drop-off, and allow you to navigate the parking lot and pick your aisle without being told or dictated back towards the entrance to the park. And then with that, the improvements here, we've got our elevated community connector to the Detroit Shoreway neighborhood that's going to connect straight from the West 76th Street tunnel to the second deck of the beach house. We have then the trail network that will be completed as part of this project. We've got foot wash stations and shower stations for those who are leaving the beach. And then the plaza, as we discussed, and we've got two locations right now coined for bike parking. Then last and not least, the replacement beach house.
He mentioned bikes.
Yes. Yes, bikes.
Bike parking.
Bike parking, yes. The reason you see draft on here is because we're finalizing the details and we do not want these to get out in the public without being in final form. So as you can see, one of the steps that we took here at the beach house was the replacement beach house. Was this second deck, we spent a lot of time on how best to program that second deck. It gives you the views of downtown, the beach, the sunsets, etc. And where we've arrived with is we feel that it's best that that second deck remain completely open. So it is open to all views in all directions. And what we're working on right now are some details of how to exactly program that second floor and how to institute kind of this cool, flexible, seasonal tiki bar, tiki hut, where we're looking to locate that in the southern end of the second deck to provide those views to the lake, to provide those views downtown, and then also have that fireplace in the middle so that we can still utilize the structure during those shoulder seasons. So as we work to finalize these plans, we expect to bring back to you two GMPs, again, that phased GMP approach where we would bring to you the parking lot improvements, the trail, the plaza, the elevated deck, and then in that second phase of GMP, we'll bring the costs related to the
Sean, so could you go back to the beach house showing the elevated roof?
Sure.
Yeah, right there. Have you looked at the what's going to happen when the wind hits that roof?
I mean, haven't.
Could you go down that?
I mean, I would think you'd get a real tunnel effect.
We have ran all the calculations in terms of uplift. Anytime you have an open deck such as this, one of your main concerns, not so much is it your dead load, mm-hmm. it's your literal yeah. uplift load.
But so I was thinking of the people that are going to be in that wind tunnel.
Well, this is really no different than what we have today in terms of the two open pavilions that sit in that similar position just to the north. And similar to any other open pavilion, on windy days, the wind traverses through the pavilions.
But you're right. There's an uplift. The hill is right there. I mean, that's where people used to hang glide.
The hang gliding occurs. Here. I could show you where the hang gliding occurs real quick. So the hang gliding actually occurs here, along the bluff. So if the beach house is here,
okay.
the hang gliding occurs
here.
The paragliding. We're actually. To your point on the grade of the structure, we've taken a lot of care to elevate the structure, but at the same time have it low enough so it doesn't pose too much of a visual barrier. We needed to actually design, taking into account global warming and whatnot, that if lake levels were to rise and we had a large storm, like another Sandy, we had to place this building high enough so that we're not seeing waves hit the building itself. So we actually did great wave run-up calculations to make sure that that didn't happen, so the waves wouldn't hit the building in the future. But in terms of setting it on a hill, you're going to see no more wind in this location than what you do in the existing open buildings.
Okay, I see. It's about the same elevation.
Correct.
How do you access the second floor then? I saw a staircase on the one side, external, and then you can get there obviously from connecting to the neighborhood.
Correct.
What is there an ADA access directly from the beach?
There is. So around the back of the building, right here, Commissioner,
okay,
there's a ramp that wraps up the back, which is one of the great things about this building is you have access. You have different modes of access, every angle. So if you want to hop up steps, you can. If you want to take a stroll up the ADA compliant ramp, you can. If you want to connect to the tunnel of West 76, you can. Very flexible.
That's perfect.
So when we bring the GMPs forward, we hope to be demolishing the existing structures right after Labor Day and NeoCycle.
Very good.
Thank you.
That concludes the information briefing and policy items that are on your own business.
Do we have any public comments?
Good morning. Bearing in mind that I have heard some of the preservation plans and discussions, of some of the things that I addressed here. If, as you claim, my numbers and facts are wrong, then show me. Please cite the correct ones. In 2015, the citation report omitted many events and counts that have been reported in the past. Why were they excluded? Might they show decreasing attendance in the face of huge marketing outlays? Was the park going in a new direction? Less nature, more events? Studies continue to roll in showing the benefits of quiet green time for kids and adults, improved health, better behavior, increased happiness, sharper minds. Running in a crowd of people is good exercise, but doesn't deliver the same results. Play is not the answer, though unstructured play areas for kids are a good start. I applaud them. Why should the Brecksville Nature Center and the Fort Hill Steps wait on public donations? While levy dollars are poured into sand volleyball, water taxi, boarding theater, and food venues. Brecksville Nature Center repairs were promised two levies ago. People approved it, anticipating the dollars would be spent. Is this nature center like Brecksville Stables, the Anything closed? When the Rexville Stable contract was awarded, I reminded you that an inexperienced operator had failed before. He chose concessionaire Blue Hounds Pie in the Sky. A marketing background only assures polished presentations. It doesn't guarantee success. Twice the stables were bought back and run well by horsemen with real experience running a business. The focus on attracting visitors from outside the region, the stable used to do that, bringing riders to programs and to enjoy the wonderful trails. Recently, it became a divisive and hostile environment. Rangers forced out, huge turnover in boarders, much touted veterans program disbanded, issues with animal care, and unpaid bills. Now Metro Parks is just shutting it down. It was not the facility, but the concessionaire caused the problems. Now many will suffer. Commissioner Moore frequently states a few people have horses. But when you need crowd control, you look to the mounted unit. When you need people to connect with police, the horses are the premier draw. When they need to rehab criminals or veterans or folks with emotional or physical challenges, they use horse therapy. And it works. Horses are living creatures who connect us to the living world. Bikes are just another machine. Is this how you're going to honor the centennial? Lots of reminiscing about the past, even as you sacrifice historic uses. Giant beach parties may have a place, but can't be claimed to connect people with nature. It won't help visitors care about the environment, which has such a big impact on local health. Meantime, don't get carried away with the auditor's findings and awards. After all, ECOP, with all its questionable records, received just those same honors delivered by Yost himself. Financial success should include setting money aside for maintaining the legacy park in accordance with the founding principles. And while I'm firing a shot across the bow, let me remind you that CIVIS was known for quick results and clean audits until things went south.
All right, our next meeting is actually going to be on Thursday, September 8th. We are going to move into an executive session. Rose, would you like to?
Is there a motion to go into executive session for the purposes of discussing the acquisition and purchase of real estate?
So moved.
Second.
Can we have a roll call, please?
Debbie Berry.
Yes.
Dan Moore.
Yes.
Bruce Springfield.
Yes. You're welcome to stay if you would like. We will not take any action. We will be back to you.